And hello and welcome back to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and I'm speaking with Francis McGaughey, who's a veteran TV and film writer, director and producer. His documentary, The Best Government Money Can Buy, presented a behind-the-scenes comprehensive and nonpartisan examination of the system of lobbying in Washington, D.C. He joins us in the studio today to talk about what can be expected from the new Congress. And already it seems, Francis, that we are seeing all of this grandstanding over this futile vote on repealing health care. And we noticed that the new Speaker of the House, John Boehner, did not show up for the memorial in Tucson because he was doing a fundraiser instead. And now we find that the new head of the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform, Darrell Issa, who has charged the Obama administration as being the most corrupt in history, who has already sent out 150 letters of solicitation to the biggest, most powerful corporate lobbies in Washington asking for their wish lists, he now finds himself the target of a devastating investigation in The New Yorker.
Yes, it'll be very interesting to see how that affects his activities. I was amused by him sending out the 150 letters because that struck me as inviting a bunch of foxes to a discussion about whether or not we should fence the hen house. And I can't imagine that the smokescreen sent up by the factory which he owned and increased the insurance of and then collected it after it burnt down isn't somehow going to blow across his committee and affect what he does.
And the number of cars he stole.
Yes.
And the fact that him and his brothers.
Well, his brother stole them. His brother stole them.
Right. But they were. He wasn't a slouch. These were Maseratis, right?
Yes. One of them was a pretty good car. That's right. True, yes. And of course, another one he had to be driving, which had a gun in the glove locker that was loaded, which naturally he didn't know anything about.
Yes. Along with a flare gun as well.
Yes.
Yes. And somehow he in his resume about his stellar military service, there's apparently an alternative narrative there.
Yes, he insists, and he also insists that he was Nixon's bodyguard, but the records seem to show otherwise. And of course, we can't ask President Nixon anymore.
No. Well, he may just be a kind of garden variety blowhard, but he is the head of an important committee. Mm-hmm. And we did have Henry Waxman in charge of the last one. And it seems that what happens – and Waxman did look into some important issues. It seems that these Republicans, the last time around, all they investigated was steroids and sports. They either want to use these committees use the subpoena power to harass the Democrats or go off on some tangent like – the repeal of health care, which is largely theatrical.
So well, that's the trouble.
What's the real agenda, though? I mean, of distraction?
I think the real agenda is to clog up the works with legal paperwork. You know, it requires a lot of manpower and stuff to deal with a lot of subpoenas. You have to respond to them. The White House can't be non-responsive. It's got to have some response. If it fights them, doesn't want to send the documents, doesn't want to submit people for interviews, whatever it happens to be before a committee, it all takes time and it gums up the works. And, there'd be no more effective way of preventing Obama from having a second term, as Mitch McConnell has indicated his main ambition for the next 2 years, than by just paralyzing the administration.
So you went to Washington, though, as a sort of citizen journalist to make a documentary to find out where the real power resides in Washington. And you found out that the real power is in the lobbyists. And it seems to me that lobbying is an equal opportunity operation. It seems that there's a revolving door for both Democrats and Republicans where they trade government service into private gain the minute they can. And there used to be a kind of waiting period, but they've even closed – they've reduced that down.
Well, they don't register. Yeah. The way they get around a lot of it is they don't register. I mean, Tom Daschle was a good example. When he was out of office, he worked for a law firm which had large health company clients like Healthcare South. And he didn't lobby, in inverted commas. He gave them strategic advice.
And his wife worked for one of them.
And his wife worked for one as well. And, that's sort of traditional, because now Baron Dorgan is no longer working for the people. He has become a lobbyist. Mm-hmm. And we now can see that the media, for some reason, has decided to expose facts which have been there all the time and they never bothered to look at. And his wife was the principal lobbyist for the insurance industry, which wanted to retain death taxes. And that was also an agenda of Mr. Dorgan's, which was oddly at odds with a lot of his other positions. But of course, the insurance industry wants to retain death taxes because people take out enormous insurance policies against them in order to safeguard their fortunes that they want to pass on to their heirs. Mm-hmm. And
by the way, you're using the Republican term for death taxes.
Yes, that's right, I am. Well, that shows how effective their phrase making is. You know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, I'll be using death panels next.
Right.
But yeah, that's right. Estate taxes, as yeah. we call them in my country of origin.
Right.
And
there's a slight difference, though. I mean, I don't. Maybe there's not a difference, but. To the extent to which these Democrats are going immediately out of government into lobbying, the opposite's happening with Senator Dan Coats of Indiana. He's come from lobbying back into government.
Mm-hmm.
He was a lobbyist for the mm-hmm. petroleum, whatever the umbrella group for the refiners of petroleum is. So he's you know, he's well positioned, as all of them are. So. What if you found out as a documentarian, a documentary filmmaker, and a citizen journalist, if you discovered that the real power in Washington are the lobbyists and the extent to which they fund the candidates, fund the incumbents, keep them in power? We know that the new Speaker of the House, Boehner, found it more important to be with a lobbyist.
And he wasn't the only one.
At a fundraiser.
Yeah, he wasn't the only one some of the new guys didn't swear in.
Oh, that's right. They swore in on television.
They swore it. Well, they said they swore in on television, but that was disallowed. The votes they cast were disallowed.
Right, but they were actually at a fundraiser.
But they were actually at a fundraiser.
On their first day.
Yes. Yeah. So, whereas normally they wait till the second day.
I see. So tell me about how this system works.
I mean, well, let me tell you something here. I think that casts an interesting light on the Tea Party candidates, shall we say. Mm-hmm. Now, the Tea Party candidates have suffered a certain amount of ridicule for being hypocritical in that they attacked the entrenched Washington way of doing things. And, of course, with the speed of light, they've hired lobbyists as their chiefs of staff. They've had fundraisers in order to recover the expenses of the elections they won, which is a very disturbing way of giving money, to paying them back for an election they already won, because now they owe you a favor, not for the election, but for whatever they're going to do next. But we have placed them in a position where they don't have any choice. Now, I believe we should be skeptical about politicians, about anybody who wants to go into politics. But the fact is, there are a lot of good people who want to go into politics and want to do something good for the country. If you want to do something good for the country, you obviously would like to keep your seat. You're not going to do too much in 2 years if you're in the House. And if you don't spend 40% of your time raising money, you will not be there in 2 years' time. And this applies whether you're somebody I sympathize with in their political views or whether I don't. They simply don't have any choice. And
now, does this apply to, say, a Maxine Waters?
Oh, yes.
Who's got a safe seat?
I mean, yes,
why does she, what does she need the money for?
Because somebody else can come along for that safe seat who might be beat her in the primary. Hmm. You've got to win the primary, first of all. You never know. There may be a faction in her constituency which thinks she's been there too long. Hmm. We need some new blood. We want a more radical approach or a more conservative approach. So you just don't have any choice. You've got to raise money. And that's where the power of the lobbyist comes in. Lobbyists are not per se bad people with evil intentions. I'm very happy about having lobbyists. I think people should get a chance to express those points of view. It's when they have a checkbook that the whole system becomes distorted. We have lobbyists in Britain, and they have lobbyists in every European country and at the European Parliament, but they can't give you money to get elected. And it's very depressing when you see analysis of the way members vote on particular bills which favor or disfavor particular industries, and invariably, the members who vote the way the industries would like the bill to go get several times as much in campaign money from those industries as the members who don't. And unfortunately, these votes are in effect for sale.
Again, joined in the studio by Francis McGahey, who made the documentary The Best Government Money Can Buy. He's a documentarian and citizen journalist who went to Washington, D.C. to find out who wields the real power in our nation's capital. And we're talking about the people who do, the lobbyists. So have I got it wrong? Because I thought that the safe seats on the Democratic side and the safe seats on the Republican side tend to be, either if you're a Republican, they tend to be very, very right-wing conservative districts, and, you know, like Utah and places like that. And on the left, you know, inner city minority representatives who usually have safe seats, and that the people in the swing districts, whether they swing from Democrat to Republican, are the ones that need the most money and that the ones that the lobbyists go after.
Well, obviously.
I was told that the prime spot for a freshman congressman is to get on the banking committee, because that's where they throw money at you.
Well, they absolutely do. And if you look at the chap who was going to be in charge of the subcommittee, which is going to supervise the implementation and regulation of the recent finance reform bill, 96% of his campaign funds came from one single hedge fund. Now, how on earth can anybody think that's all right? How can you have 96% of your money coming from one single company, and the disposition of your activities will affect their profits?
Well, but the Supreme Court in its recent ruling has in effect allowed a situation. Now, this is hypothetical, but it's absolutely credible. And that is that in 2012, a billionaire could find some candidate to run against Obama and spend $1 billion.
That's true.
And wouldn't have to reveal who he was or she was.
No, that's true. That's why we've got to get private money and corporation money and union money out of elections. We've got to have publicly funded elections. That's the only solution. I've thought about this a lot, and there's really no other way other than publicly funded elections. And the sad thing is we're never going to get publicly funded elections from proposals from congressmen and senators. They're much, much too scared to rock the boat that got them into the safe haven they're occupying so very comfortably.
Well, we're heading in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Everything indicates, particularly the Supreme Court ruling, and with this new Congress, because they're on a feeding frenzy now.
Yes. And, you know, and it's not just in elections. It's equally important in what people do after they're elected. And the power of some of these lobbies, as you know, is incredible. I mean, the NRA has recently been able to stop the ATF in its campaign to prevent the smuggling of weapons into Mexico. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's absolutely outrageous.
No, they've got the Tie-Hard Amendment that ties the hands of and that's just one congressman somewhere from the Midwest.
That's right.
And I'm astounded that nobody, particularly after the
particularly
massacre.
Particularly after the massacre. It's amazing that there's not been a national outcry about it.
Yeah, but remember, in the Disclose Act that was supposed to fix the most egregious part of the Supreme Court ruling on Citizens United, which was supposed to force all these big money people and corporations and unions to say who they were when you ran a campaign commercial. You know, I'm Exxon and I brought you this candidate.
Right.
And that Disclose Act was shot down via filibuster in the Senate. But before that happened, the Democrats had agreed to a waiver to allow the NRA exemption from the Disclose Act. It gives you an idea of the power of
them. They're terrorized by the NRA.
Right.
But as you know, my view is that disclosure isn't everything. After all, we know who's giving all the money now and nobody does anything about it.
Well, I think, there has to be a way to name and shame and then, get the public to recognize that the only way for the people to take back their government is for public financing.
I'd hope so. That's why I made the film.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today in the studio, Francis McGahey, who is a writer and director of the documentary The Best Government Money Can Buy. He's a citizen journalist who went to Washington. Mr. McGahey went to Washington, and it's not pretty. Thank you for joining us today. You can learn more about our program Background Briefing and contact me through ianmasters.com. We're also on Facebook at Ian Masters Media. I would like to thank producer Spencer Downing and engineer Ray Peleas. And I will be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. for another Background Briefing. Until then, bye for now. Down.